Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running a design studio, and more, all for presentation designers, managers, and presenters. Here are your hosts, Troy Collar, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
Hi, I'm Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, based in Southern California.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. This is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in snowy but sunny Montclair, New Jersey.
Woohoo, sun is good.
Yes, it's melting the snow.
All right. So welcome. So this is an interesting episode because the three of us are together just for the opening. And then we're going to kick over to a conversation that was recorded at the presentation summit that neither of you two were at. So,
No. So
it'll be fun.
I'm looking forward to it.
You're going to like it. This is a very good conversation, but let's talk about what's happening in design studios. Cause we're into the 2019 year and it is busy. I think everybody's saying the same thing. What about you two?
It is insanely busy. You're right. It just somehow the switch clicked and I'm getting calls from the existing clients, from new clients, from clients I haven't heard from in 5 years. So it's all just fall piling on top of each other.
So what's one project you're working on now?
I'm doing working for somebody who's developing an app in the nonprofit and environmental space, and so we're presenting the sort of midway project or the midway results of it, and so we're doing all these case studies and basically showing how the app can be used, which means a lot of demos. He's going to do a live demo with the actual software, but in PowerPoint we're mocking up all sorts of screens, and this happens here and this goes there, so. It's involved, but it involves a lot of storyboarding. So that's
very cool.
That's what
very
we're doing. Cool.
Sandy, what's happening out in the Midwest?
Well, I was fully prepared to do a Google rant today. I am very busy.
Take five.
But part of that busyness is my Google Slides project. I mentioned it earlier. I have concluded. That it has no place in a corporate environment. One of its claims to fame, of course, is its ability for collaboration. But if there are no rules around how people collaborate, which I have tried to establish on this project, but no one cares. If there are no rules on collaboration, it's just a mess. I can get over the technical limitations. I can... I know I'm not as adept at using the tool as I am at PowerPoint, but I think the collaboration thing is really, there have to be rules established. It's just a nightmare and I'm going crazy. It's costing the client twice as much for me to work in Google Slides.
Well, there you go.
There
you go, CFOs.
we should make, I'm dead serious. Maybe this is a future topic because
I think so.
Collaboration is such a new thing. It doesn't matter what environment. Yeah. Now, Google does really good on the collaboration, but the tool doesn't help a lot. PowerPoint has co-authoring as well as collaboration. There's so many other things, but let's just make an episode later in the year. Here's the rules of collaboration.
Sure.
We'll set the benchmark.
Okay.
Speaking of collaboration, so what's happening is travel. I get to see my home occasionally. I am currently in New Orleans. It's been rainy, but right now it's beautiful out. Not that it really matters. I'm in a ballroom most of the day, working with Lori, which makes the whole trip worthwhile. And the client work and getting paid, that's good too. But I get to spend a week with my wife, which is wonderful. But I am working on a travel mic, so hopefully the audio on this will work out. And as the two of you know, everybody else before the show, I had to restart because this mic that I recorded two tutorials with yesterday suddenly wouldn't work as we were trying to connect. And I could hear Nolan and Sandy. They couldn't hear me. Restarted my computer, had Windows updates, and apparently one of them stopped the microphone from doing its microphone thing. So we're here. not quite collaboration, but we have a group that is using Presenter View and they want to use Presenter Notes. And I set up rules. I'm like, here's what you can do, because we don't scroll, because that can cause some problems with, you know, taking the focus away from the PowerPoint advancer and you being able to go for it. So, and I give my rules for using that. And it was, you know, everybody has their own idea of what they should do. So it's very difficult to have consistency. So I totally agree with your idea of there needs to be rules of engagement for collaboration on projects.
Absolutely.
Is anybody traveling or anything doing it? Am I the only person traveling? Is anybody going to do something else?
I'm not traveling for a month or so, but I have booked and I can now announce. I'll be speaking in June at Creative Pro Week in Seattle, which is a whole week of design, of a design conference. It's focused on Adobe products like Photoshop, Illustrator, InDesign. But starting last year, they announced or they introduced 2 days of a presentation focus called Click. So they're sort of conferences within the major conference, and the presentation one is called Click. So that's June 10th to the 14th in Seattle, and I'll be speaking alongside Julie Terberg and Richard Goring and a few other people who I don't know, but I'm excited to meet. And it's a great conference. I think I'm going to go out for pretty much all of it, because I'm going to go to soak up some InDesign knowledge before the presentation part, which is later in the week.
That's really cool.
Awesome.
Yeah,
I'm really looking forward to it. It's a really good group of people and who are running it, and people I've known for years but have never sort of officially met, and so I'm excited about it.
Cool. Sandy, are you going somewhere as well?
No, I'm going to be speaking at the SharePoint Saturday Twin Cities on April 6th is when it is. So I'm looking forward to that. I did it last November, I think it was, and it was a really satisfying experience. That's the only way I can explain it. It was just, people were hungry for what I had to say, and I just really enjoyed telling them about it.
That's awesome.
It's nice to break out of, to meet new audiences.
That's right.
I think, and talk to new audiences. All right. So what's happening in the world of news?
Well, there's been a lot of discussion among our group about about Morph enhancements.
Yeah. Very cool. Now, I still don't know if they've arrived yet on the PC. Have you guys seen them yet on the PC? I know they're on the Mac.
I have not.
You have not. As of this moment, I have not, and I am on pins and needles waiting.
So it's now, of course, when we say arrived, that's only insider fast or whatever they're calling it. So it won't be released to every user for probably a few weeks. That's just the way it works. But if you're on inside fast on the Mac, I can guarantee that you have these new features. So these are improvements to Morph. One of the biggest issues with Morph was, as cool as it is, and it's really powerful and we love it, but one of the issues was sometimes it wouldn't morph the right shapes. Like you would think, or you would want it to morph this square to that circle, but it wouldn't match up. And then you would have to go in and edit points and do tricks to group things to make sure that, you know, things were morphing the way you wanted it to. So what they've now added is the ability to specify across two slides specific items on each slide that will morph. And the way you do it, it's very cool, is you go to the selection pane and you rename the objects to match. And you rename them starting with two exclamation marks. So for example, exclamation mark, shape 4. And then you go to the next slide and it might be a completely different shape, but you give it the same name. And now Morph knows to match those two together. And, you know, there's still some little bugs here and there, and it's still not, you know, I would say it's probably not still as powerful as tweening was, you know, back in the Flash days, but it's much improved. It's a really cool thing. And you now have a lot more control over programming Morph.
And I don't think this has been announced outside of this podcast so far. When is this podcast coming out? It has not,
as far as I know. Okay. But it's fair game because it's on my software right now, so I can talk about it.
I love it.
Hopefully by the time this comes out, it'll be available on the PC and everyone will get it in the next few weeks.
Yeah, very excited about it. It's a huge improvement. I think it's going to be great because it gives although it's only one object to one object, but it gives a mapping scenario and it's things we've been looking for and asking for. Very excited about it because it should solve a lot of problems.
Yeah. And now, I mean, you can morph photos a little more easily. Now, again, it's still not going to be like that old Michael Jackson video of the morphing faces, but it's still, you know, it's an improvement. It's nice.
Wouldn't that be nice if we could do that?
One of these days. We'll get there.
Have you guys seen the, moving on, have you guys seen the Microsoft ads, the twin ads?
Yeah.
Yeah. The campaign.
I like them. Explain first what they are.
Sure. So Microsoft Office basically has two, I guess you could say, parallel runs of products. There's the Office 365 Office product, and then there's the 2019 Office product. And the difference being 2019 is desktop only. Office 365 is desktop and cloud and a subscription.
Right. The 2019 is you pay once, you pay a lot of money once, and you own it forever.
Yes, exactly.
So 365, you have to pay every year.
Yep, every year. But it's not bad.
But less.
$99, but I think the price is going up. Someone said that.
And you get a lot more. Oh, I actually hadn't heard that. But you get more features and more things with 365. And they've been pushing people to move to 365. So what's the campaign?
Well, and that's what the campaign is about. It's comparing the two. It's almost like Microsoft is cannibalizing 2019. You get a compare. Although that's the only commercial, the ads that I've seen. You compare the two, a set of twins, each has a set of tasks to accomplish on their respective tools, one on 2019, one on Office 365. And the only ones I've seen, Office 365 always wins. How about you guys?
Yes, I think that's the point of it.
It's skewed to make sure that happens.
I think the Mac always won in the Mac PC Apple ads too.
There you go. Right?
Now I've seen three. I've seen one for PowerPoint, one for Excel, and one for Word. I don't know if there are more than that.
Those are the only ones I've seen.
And they're funny.
Yeah, and they're funny.
Yeah, I think they're cute. I mean, they've gotten some criticism that they're sort of dissing their own product, but that's the point. They want to say it's not as good.
Now, I'm I'm not talking as an expert here, but I'm pretty sure 2019, from what I've read, if you think back to last year when we were kind of researching this, 2019 is theoretically the last separate install version you can get before the subscription only. So maybe they have a slant towards saying, hey, get ready. This is the future and it's better.
Could be.
Don't know. For certain.
Yeah. Well, speaking of commercials, have you seen the new iPad Pro commercials? And these might just be online. I haven't seen it on TV.
I have not.
I guess the commercials have been on TV, but then they came out with a behind the scenes version of it, showing how they made the commercials. And the iPad Pro commercials were all made on an iPad Pro. Right, not using any software that you can't use on the iPad Pro, including, as they said, and showed just a small clip of it. I wish they'd shown more, but they said they did all the animation via Keynote.
On the current version of Keynote?
Yeah. So the commercials are good. The commercials are nice. There's some clips and sort of the behind the scenes of them, you know, in Keynote animating some of the images and frames. So there you go.
Hey, welcome everyone. We are at the Presentation Summit in San Diego 2018, and we've gathered a few more people for a little conversation here. We're actually not sure when this one will post, so when you hear it, hey, it's live. But we came up with a really cool conversation topic that we're going to expand into this conversation for the podcast, and it's this.
non-designers that work into PowerPoint or presentation design. So they don't have a design background, such as Lori, who's with us, who has a formal design degree and everything else. And her session was phenomenal here at the summit on taking design skills into presentation world. So it's really we don't have an agenda. Hopefully this is going to work out really well. So let's start off with introductions, starting with Brian.
Sure. My name is Brian Jones. I run elearningart.com. And I am an accidental instructional designer and accidental graphic designer as well. Stumbled into the field, but forced into a very visual field and having to create graphics on my own. I use PowerPoint as my main graphic design tool, which surprises most people. They think PowerPoint and bullet points, but I create all my social media images. I create all of my icons that I use myself, clip art, everything that I can do in PowerPoint, I do. It's the one program that doesn't make me break out into a sweat that is a design program.
And actually, before you finish up there, Brian, you were saying your highest rated blog post.
Yes, is how to create your own clip art, where I didn't think anything of it. I just took a picture of a bike in my office and showed how in PowerPoint you could trace it using shapes and the union tools and subtract tools and all that sort of stuff, and how somebody could create that clip art themselves. And that is the single most viewed blog post that I've done, and YouTube video.
I would say that's using PowerPoint as a design tool.
Yes.
And introductions. Mm-hmm.
Hello, I'm Steffi. I have been doing design in presentations and stuff for quite some time now. I work for the Presentation Guild. I have a day job. I'm starting my own business, and I started out in chemistry. Wow. So
wait, it gets better than that, though. You went from chemist into artist, correct?
Yes. I started out as a chemist, and I got a degree in chemistry and French.
Oh, I did not know that portion.
Oui, c'est vrai. But then I went into grad school. I was going to be a PhD candidate. I was going to be a professor, and I hated my PhD program. Hated it. It was so dry, literally. And just kind of left grad school and then ended up in design world randomly by happenstance. And so I started in design, and I had to fight my way through. And
phenomenal. Yeah. So, you know, that's probably why I fear keeps you from doing things. I'm pretty sure it was that fear that kept me from doing a PhD program. I was afraid I'd hate it. Oh, wait. I didn't do a master's to get to that stage. Never mind. Okay. And Lori, please.
I'm Lori Collar with TLC Creative. Nice to be back again. And I love our topic for today because I think it's incredibly relevant. I am a designer trained in college, degree. Have basically I eat, live, and breathe design, and that's been my career choice the whole time. And I fell into PowerPoint is really how it happened.
I think so. Maybe that's a great conversation to go with, falling into PowerPoint, because we had this conversation earlier where nobody at this stage actually says I'm going to do presentation design as their career path. Everybody kind of falls into it. I know for us, when we go through hiring, we don't even list presentation design. Well, we list the word presentation design, but we don't say we need PowerPoint people, because nobody knows, like, hey, this is a design program. We're going to be actually doing real design. PowerPoint's our canvas. And for us, it's really cool because the canvas can be, you know, 300 feet wide or multiple screens and all kinds of really, really cool canvases to work with in addition. But falling into it, PowerPoint came up for you, Brian, because...
Well, I'd say there's two different things. One, it's a program that almost everybody has. So having the Office package is something that I've had since college. So that's one part of it, is already having the tool. The other is when I was building e-learning, this was over a decade ago, the authoring tools were actually add-ons to PowerPoint. So PowerPoint was your main tool, and then the interactivity was built on with these add-ons. So you're there, and that e-learning authoring tool essentially is PowerPoint, and you're creating your graphics in PowerPoint. And so whatever you learn to do there is how you're doing your graphic design. And then that's turned into me using that. That's the tool that I've learned how to use. Photoshop, Illustrator, I don't know how to do more than just a couple of things, and I get super frustrated. PowerPoint, because I've been using it, because it's intuitive for me now, it's the single tool I go to first if I can. To design in.
I think it's funny how you talk about falling into PowerPoint. I was dragged kicking and screaming, thoroughly unwilling. I did not want to do it. I was very unhappy about it because I had come out of being a chemist and I taught myself and I struggled and I forced myself to be accepted as a designer because I didn't have a design background. So I had finally gotten to that point, and then I went on maternity leave, and when I came back, they had reorganized the teams, and they said, you're on the presentation team, and I was not happy. But then it was kismet, because PowerPoint kind of took that forgotten chemist in me, all that analytical brain stuff, and combined it with all the art stuff, and I just kind of found my niche. It was just the perfect meeting place of all of the parts of the brain.
Let's just identify or acknowledge they at least had a presentation team.
It was the first one.
Oh,
it was new.
Oh, you're a part of the inaugural.
I was.
We're doing this new thing. Okay, I think that's pretty much the industry because we do presentation work of all kinds. We use many different presentation software platforms. But the idea that it is becoming mature, I think it's a fairly well accepted entity. I mean, we work with, Laura, you can back me up or say no, but we have a lot of MarCom departments, internal departments. Yes. Now, we love partnering with them because we basically have a sales pitch that goes like this. You design it, we'll make it work. We're not going to step on your toes. We're not going to take your work, your internal work, but you also don't have to deal with the issues of working with Microsoft Office. Keynote is even a whole different scenario. So, you know, they now recognize it's a need, but they don't want to specialize in it internally. Mm-hmm. So we've actually, you know, managed to pick up a number of agreements and stuff, and it lets us do what we love to do, but we make them look good too.
Absolutely. I just got off a call with an agency, so not a MarCom department, but an agency. Again, they recognize that, you know, they've got killer design skills, but they don't know PowerPoint. They don't have anybody who even wants to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And so they know me, and I'm like, yeah, heck yeah, bring it over. We can totally do that, and we'll give you an excellent template. You design it. We'll have a conversation about some issues, some suggestions, like,
limitations.
Well, like your font should not be 10-point. Mm-hmm. But, you know, beyond that, it's been great, and I love filling that role of being the expert.
Design-wise, so, Brian, e-learning is mainly consumed on a monitor in front of you.
Yes.
So you may have a little different.
Yeah, it could be mobile.
And mobile. This can even apply more if it's on mobile. So we have this whole thing about larger is better for the audience. Again, not for the presenter, because smaller means you can pack more things in there, which is also a problem for the audience. So we're always larger is better. But in the e-learning cycle, you're probably not as concerned about that because it's consumed right in front. You know,
That's not a good question.
It's not somebody sitting 30 feet away.
Yeah, you're not thinking about the person at the back of the room. I think more shifting to e-learning, I'm thinking about interactivity, which may not exist natively. You can do it in PowerPoint. I'm thinking about that more than font size. But how do you have somebody interact? How do you have somebody make a choice? How do you have them get custom feedback? Within PowerPoint, I think there's a lot of hidden design features, but there's also a lot of hidden interactivity features. So you can have the hack that's we used in e-learning all the time was draw a square over the area that you are wanting to link to the next slide. It'd be essentially four slides layered or five slides layered where it appeared like interaction was happening. All you were doing was linking to the next slide
and then
making it. Yes, that's the hack, is making it transparent and then using the selection pane, hopefully, to name it so that people can actually see that there's something there.
History wise, when did you start using PowerPoint? Like version number, roughly?
Oh, gosh, I don't even know what version number, but it was the first presentation tool I ever used.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So we're just wrapping up a larger interactive project right now where it's a touchscreen kiosk all driven by PowerPoint, so the end client can actually make their own edits. We could do this in many different ways.
Yeah.
But you say a transparent box. There was a point, and I believe it was PowerPoint 2010, might have been 2007, where you couldn't have a transparent box. You had to, if you made it 100%, it would just disappear.
So you'd make it like 1% visible.
Yeah, you'd make it 99%, so it was 1% visible, exactly. So So the transparent thing's very cool that you can actually do transparent again. But you make the button area larger than the little icon underneath it, and it leads to another.
And there were some sessions this week on making PowerPoint more interactive in a way that people don't think about. And what you guys were talking about, though, is interesting, the why PowerPoint, when you start talking about client work, that there's kind of the dream of, but we could then make changes down the road in this program that we understand and we could use. instead of having to go back into Illustrator or Photoshop or something that would be more
challenging. You said it originally, that program was available to you. You knew how to use it. And I think PowerPoint's, I don't know if I'm right or wrong, but I think is one of the most accessible used programs across the board. That's why everybody wants their stuff in it, because the whole department, the whole company has it available to work with.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think PowerPoint opens a lot of doors. It makes that barrier to entry so much lower. So if you maybe would like to even transition into something design related, it's actually a really great tool to get acclimated to and to learn some basic design principles and just start creating in PowerPoint, because you don't have to pay for the expensive stuff, right?
Design principles are design principles. And that's kind of where conversation starts. Like, hey, we should have a conversation about this. PowerPoint is a canvas. Now, if you follow the old school Microsoft templates, here's a title, here's a bullet list, and here's a second bullet list next to it, and here's a bar chart. That's not design. That's putting content. That's more of print production, in my opinion. It's how do we get things to look organized and succinct, or, you know, there's some sort of flow. Design adds to that. It simplifies. It makes it so the audience can work through it. And PowerPoint is just a tool to do that for us. I mean, that's where we've always come from. We're a design studio that now works in presentation design. And as a end user, I think PowerPoint is so exciting. You know, here's the point, or here's the really cool. I'm waiting for this trivia fact. We're probably 2 years out. I'm waiting for the fact where somebody's going to do a big survey and they're going to say PowerPoint is the number one video editor in the world, the most used video editor in the world. Now, does that make it the best video in the world? Definitely not. But it's accessible to so many people. Our daughter, when she was even younger, was producing videos, and she would actually do video segments, and she'd add them into slides, and she'd do the transitions in PowerPoint and export a video. So to her, that was a video editor. She now uses Premiere and does some amazing stuff. But every admin can use PowerPoint to make, you know, everything from, you can just make all kinds of videos, but you can also edit it. A lot of times you get the video clip of CNN, they want to get the little ticker tape off the bottom, crop it in PowerPoint, re-export it. That's a video editor program. So anyways, I think that PowerPoint is a huge design tool. People don't recognize it as a design platform. It's also kind of becoming this big video editing tool within limitations, but I bet someday the statistics going to say...
How many years do you think until the art departments of the world, the schools and universities, don't look at PowerPoint as a second-rate program and recognize that it is a program that a designer can and should use?
What was your view? Coming from a design learning, obviously Microsoft Office was the low level thing, not the low hanging fruit. It was the low level.
Yeah. Oh gosh. How many years? I'd be pessimistic and say a little longer than you think. Yeah. I would like to say 5 to 7, but honestly, there's such a stigma around PowerPoint.
I mean,
it's hardcore. Yeah. I'd say like 20.
It's going to change because, I mean, now we have agencies that are recognizing, saying, okay, we don't know PowerPoint, but we recognize that this needs to be done well and needs to be you know, designed well. And so I'm like, okay, this is good.
Yeah, and I think it's up to all of us to just kind of get our best content out there and to say, this was done in PowerPoint. Can you believe it? And especially the people who don't have a design background, it's even more important for them to put their amazing stuff out there and say, this was done in PowerPoint. I don't have any formal design training. You can do this too.
I kind of disagree. I don't think PowerPoint will ever be recognized as a design tool of preference.
I agree with you.
True.
I think it's going to be a preference, design tool of functionality and can be used for professional results. But this kind of loops back to the conversation we were just having last night here at the summit, was about desktop publishing. Why can't PowerPoint have some additional features? Well, there's a cost-benefit analysis, and Microsoft says it's just we can't put the cost into developing those because we don't have enough of a benefit because we have other programs that kind of maybe sort of do it. But you know, but then you have InDesign, which is a professional tool for desktop publishing.
Love InDesign.
So do I.
But I'm never going to open it.
No.
Like,
yes.
Yeah,
okay.
You know, so that's it. So when I create an ebook that I'm giving away that's like a content upgrade or whatever, an ebook that I'm giving away on my site, I create that in PowerPoint. When I create social media graphics or quotes, I create that in PowerPoint. And from the image standpoint, I think one of the big aha breakthroughs that most people aren't thinking, I think there's two things. One, you can save a PowerPoint as a PNG. You file, save as, PNG. You can export that single slide or the whole deck. So I'll have a, and then tip number two is you can change the canvas size. So if I'm creating Twitter images and I want to create quote images, all I'm doing there is figuring out how many pixels the optimal Twitter image is. I'm entering that into my custom canvas size. I'm creating my quote images there, and then it's file save as, and I can create new quote images in minutes instead of going and opening Photoshop or some program that I don't know how to use.
And you know what it is about? Okay, I love InDesign too. I really, really love InDesign. I'm a huge advocate. However,
I love the punctuation.
Being in a giant corporation, having PowerPoint and being able to make documents that you can print and templates that are, we do a lot of templates that are ad templates, flyer templates, a whole bunch of stuff, and we put it out there for the whole corporation to use, and that saves me a lot of headaches.
Creating
and
the templates in PowerPoint.
Yes.
So letter size, 8.5 by 11.
Yes, they're set up for. Mm-hmm.
But then somebody else can just modify the text.
Someone else could, exactly. Yeah. And it saves, I don't have to get that production work because we're a very small design department, and I can focus on heavier lifts.
Yeah. So and the simpler things, it's branded because you have a template.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's
but awesome. You're giving a template of design quality to yes. people that don't have to worry yes. about with fill in the blank segments.
Right. So I design it once and send it away. And then the 5,000 people in the company who want flyers and ads and stuff, they can take care of it themselves.
The custom template set up for Twitter and Facebook, that's a really, we haven't done that because everything for us is based in.
That's what my sessions
about. Oh, is it really?
Yes.
Oh,
that was really a high five if you didn't hear it.
That's a really good library. We should probably have a library of those, Lori, because we have them all preset in Photoshop or Illustrator, you know, all the elements and we export because that's our workflow, but it would make sense to have ones.
So the presentation summit giveaway that we did and all the quotes that was in that post that you guys all contributed to, everything was done in PowerPoint.
You know, let me back out and do a little bit more of an infomercial.
And can you make sure to add a link to that in our show notes?
Yes. So what Brian has done, the dilemma with everything in any industry is there needs to be somebody to spearhead it. Brian must have way more time on his hands. I don't know how, because his kids are like under the age of 5 and there's multiple. But I mean, it's because you're not sleeping at night. That's what it is. But he put together he took 21 industry experts and put it together. I'll be happy to say that Lori was in it. I was in it. Steffi was in it. Mm-hmm. Yes. And that was very cool. And you did a second one for the summit here, right?
So that one was tied to the summit this year on the best presentation tip. And then a year ago, I did PowerPoint tip, trick, and hack.
That's it.
Yeah.
Both of them are very cool. We have links. They're both in our blog, the PowerPoint blog. They're both listed there, but they just point out the ones that like I or Lori did. But we'll put the generic link in the show notes
because
it's well worth, it's the what are the little yellow and black books you get when you're in college? The dummies. The Cliff Notes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Cliff Notes of quick design ideas. Very, very
good stuff. I love doing those. And if you can get a good group of people that's an expert in their field and ask a single question and get a nice, it's all like 50 to 100 word responses, but you're getting to pull in a ton of power. And then you're talking about time. Yes, there is a lot of time going in to create all this stuff to track people down, to get them to answer the questions and then to format it all. But the nice thing is I'm talking to people that are all smarter than I am, and they're doing the heavy lifting with answering the question, and then I'm just the guy that's coordinating it all. So that's the nice thing. So thank you guys for being smarter than me.
Did you actually lay all those out in PowerPoint?
Yes.
See, I wouldn't even guess that when I looked at them.
Mm-hmm. It had a nice aesthetic. Can I ask a question of Steffi? So we're talking about, you know, coming from a design background or not. So you did not come from a design background.
Nope.
And as you said, you clawed your way up. Mm-hmm. Where did you get your inspiration? How did you develop your design aesthetic?
I ended up having to teach myself everything, right? So I started in print.
Which is a very good place to start.
Which everything, agreed. Honestly, I think, and then I went to web. So I think all the best web designers have beginnings in print because you learn typography, you learn hierarchy. It's there. And then web, and of course it's branching out to UX and all this other stuff, it's a natural progression to presentations, honestly, because presentation design involves a lot of user experience techniques, you know, how you plan your presentation, how you organize your content on the slide. So it's just kind of this lovely continuum that goes from a strong print start to where we are now in presentation design. it's probably the most elevated form.
And
of
you
design.
Pull, you go right back to the print for all the PowerPoint. We call them PowerPoint documents, but you're making your flyers and stuff with fill in the blank parts.
You come full circle.
If you only came from multimedia, that's actually a hard step to. I think it's a hard step to go into how do I make a print piece that actually follows design principles and everybody understands as far as being professional.
Yeah. And conversely, I think it's interesting because coming from a design degree, which I love and I appreciate, so many peers, they look at PowerPoint and it's almost, you know, like, oh, I would never. And it makes me sad because like there's so much potential and creativity available to you in PowerPoint. Now, 10 years ago, before we could do shadows and cool stuff, okay, I go. But now that you can do so many typical, normal, cool effects, and you've got animation, you've got multiple slides, you have so much in front of you to work with.
Some of my best presentation design was inspired from material design. Like I went and I read through Google's material design, just their whole manual. There's a place on there you can see how they treat everything that they have online, how movement, how everything moves and everything. And that actually is, if you find material design guidelines anywhere, it's really brilliant. When they're well done, it's got all of the different aspects you could want. It's got the hierarchy, it's got the motion principles, it's everything. And it's just kind of fun to try and do those things in PowerPoint. Sometimes you have to break it a little bit, but I've literally never done anything in my life the easy way. I somehow ended up doing everything the hard, long, roundabout way. And it kind of pays off because you learn so much more and you end up in this really solid place where you know what doesn't work and you know what works and you just keep pushing on.
So for e-learning modules, are you mainly looking at corporate clients, Brian? Who's absorbing these?
Yeah, and so it's interesting in talking about like why people are poo-pooing PowerPoint. It's the same reason people are poo-pooing. Like if somebody says,
so says the man with a 2-year-old.
But if I told somebody I worked in e-learning, or if you're in a large organization, you're explaining to somebody that you're in e-learning, they're like, ugh, you're that person. Like you're a terrible person. You're creating these terrible compliance courses that we don't want to take, and you're forcing us to do that. That's the worst of training. You're not helping somebody do their job. Same thing with PowerPoint. I think that Microsoft did themselves a big disservice by having the default be the title slide or the title up top with the 5 bullet points. Because you take it, the non-designer opens up the program and they say, oh, I'm supposed to enter a title and now I'm supposed to put a bunch of bullet points in here.
And that's where Keynote did a great job.
Yeah, well, you know where it really should start? The default should be outline view.
Yeah.
So you can, it starts with writing.
Interesting.
Everything starts with writing. All the best stuff. You write it down first. That's where it should start.
Or blank, or it should be a single image with like a headline or something like that. Instead of here's how you can fit 8 bullet points onto the slide.
So when Microsoft was still putting out only starter guides, including like whole here's how to do a pitch talk. You know, it was just basically lists of bullets with leading questions to fill in. They weren't helping design. They were helping information flow. Keynote, on the other hand, comes onto the scene and they're like, hey, here's an open canvas and put a beautiful background in here and you should put some big text up here and a little text over here. You know, they really approached it from a design phase. Stigmas stick around. Keynote is looked at as a design tool. PowerPoint is not. In my opinion, PowerPoint is caught up and in some places surpassed it as being a design tool for like 3D models. We can now use 3D models as image accent images. Keynote has a lot of things you cannot doing Microsoft PowerPoint still. Yeah. But the idea is they just opened it up to this whole open-ended design, much like you're talking about. And the interesting conversation here is we did a lot of e-learning in the past. We actually moved away from it. Can I ask is it okay to say what programs you mainly author in?
Yeah, so if it depends. So first of all, like opening up an authoring tool in general doesn't, creating a course isn't always the solution, right? Correct. So creating a job aid might be the thing to do. There's a whole, but in terms of hardcore authoring tools, I use Articulate Storyline as my main tool because it's very PowerPoint-esque. It's built for the subject matter could go back and make some edits themselves. Before Articulate Storyline was out, I was using Articulate Studio, which was the PowerPoint add-on. And then there's some things that they made the interactions more native within the program, so it wasn't like hacking PowerPoint to make things work.
Okay, yeah, because there's so many authoring tools out there, and we were going down that path, and we just decided there was lots of people that could do it, and they e-learning, this is kind of an interesting conversation because they weren't looking for design. They were looking for execution, budget, and timeline, mm-hmm. where we were always going over the top. Well, we want to actually design a template that'll match with this interface design we can utilize out of the software, and we kind of ended up losing work because I was going too far into design where they weren't looking for it, but I was like, this is better for your audience. They'll actually be engaged, or at least say it's professional as opposed to not. So you've found a fantastic niche and you've made it work. And by the way, we love those. Those are my top choices for software programs in that realm. Now, are you also doing like PDF handouts and whatnot as supplemental?
Yeah, it's whatever. It's figuring out what people need to do their jobs. I think that's the most important thing. And then what I would say is when I'm approaching e-learning, when I'm getting into a tool like Articulate Storyline, for me, there's two reasons I'm using that tool. One is to build scenarios where there's interactivity, people making choices, getting custom feedback, and then it's storytelling. So if you look at the asset library that I created, it's solving those problems. So lots of pictures of people breaking the assets apart so that there's 200 Troy images, happy, angry, sad, confused, and like, and they're all the backgrounds are clipped out.
Could you deal with 200 images at the same time?
Sure, bring it on.
But so that people are then, as the non-designer, can tell a story by compositing those images. So I take the picture of you angry and Lori's sad, and now she's angry and you're confused. And is this sounding familiar?
You know where you're going to need to. You know where you're going to need to. Creepy. Your next learning curve is going to be is how do I build 3D animation? See how that's finally coming into PowerPoint, because you can take those. I mean, 3D doesn't have to be 3D. It could be 2D from a 3D program.
Well,
I guess
that's exactly.
No, you can build the built-in animation.
I was talking to the Microsoft guys. The most excited I am is I have all these character images that are 2D, but when we're shooting conversations, I've shot all these characters from multiple angles, but the backgrounds are a pain to shoot. I want to build backgrounds in a 3D model where you can pivot the room around to match the angles that the characters would be in while they're having their conversation. Ooh. And I tried about a year ago, but there was no clear guidance on what was going to work with the 3D stuff, and so I tabled it. But I'm excited about it again.
So for all those listening, there is no clear guidance from Microsoft on what to use besides GLB as the preferred file format.
Yes.
But there's a lot of limitations.
Hear today that they are going to be putting out some guidance
on. That might be a conversation I had that I'm spreading a rumor about to shame people into getting it done.
But that would be helpful. I dropped that as a project because it wasn't, I felt like I was operating in the dark.
From a design perspective, if you have a conversation between animated characters, you could end up with like really bad, I can't even think of it, like jib-jab animation. Or you can end up with things that are actually kind of professional and there's some aesthetics to it. There's a leading focus to the layouts. I mean, that's a design element.
Jib-jab's bad? I love it.
Oh, dear.
Dang, I need another example. So you can end up with some really bad stuff or you can have some really good stuff. Again, design background would be a great asset, especially if it came from a film and video program because you'd understand motion, you'd have a better understanding of even light sourcing and what's going to put focus on things.
Or step back, better storytelling, right? Storytelling, even before you start looking at assets.
So maybe that's the conversation, is design storytelling?
I think it's an important part.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a huge part.
Okay, so storytelling, I'm going to call on Lori here. So we have an agency that we get to work with. They don't hire us, but we get a lot of their assets for some key executives. They build beautiful layouts. None of it is in PowerPoint. Everything is Illustrator, maybe InDesign. I don't know. In Illustrator only for those guys?
In Keynote. They work in Keynote.
Oh, they work well. They drop things into Keynote. They don't design in Keynote. So what they do is they give us a 50-slide deck. It's 50 images. Now, individually, and they just drop the image onto the slide. Say, there's our slide. So things are automatically not going to line up. So if it's a number one point, they have a giant stylized number one, it slightly moves a couple pixels across the slides because they didn't actually keep it work from the same artboard in Illustrator. So things are in the same place. But they're beautiful. But then when you put them all together, you string them, making a story. the audience just sees one style, click, another style, talk, another style, talk, click, another style. They don't mesh together as a flowing storyline visually.
Well, and another thing, too, to consider, color of this project I think you're referring to, color played a huge factor, and it was beautiful washes of color blocking. And they didn't think it through, and so you would have a yellow followed by an orange, and it just was distracting, and the color combinations weren't real good. And if you had been designing it in PowerPoint where you are naturally looking at the flow easily, it's a big difference, I think. I really do.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole concept of PowerPoint, storytelling, flow through the whole conversation, design aspects throughout are not always there. And you two have done phenomenal. So I think we actually need to wrap up based on
timing.
Can I
ask one final question I think would be really helpful? So what is one or two places you guys go for inspiration?
Oh, this is great.
Is there a website? Is there a learning place? Like where have you found
webinar?
Your best design inspiration?
Well, there is a great webinar at the Presentation Guild, Inspired by Design, about 20 minutes once a month. Great place to go get inspiration. And online, as for websites, I love going to well-done DataViz websites because I live in data most of the time, and I'm always looking for new ways to make the data tell that story properly, and that's where I go. It's my go-to. Awesome.
How about you, Brian?
I don't spend a lot of time there, but when I'm looking for design inspiration, I think Pinterest is still a great place to go. People spend a lot of time just creating amazing visuals, and you can search by the sort of thing you're looking at and get some inspiration around that.
Sure.
I have never done that.
Yeah.
It is a good place to go.
But that's
I
me.
Agree.
I guarantee Lori has. Have
I
you?
I have, yeah. Okay. Exactly. And I would just say years ago, Julie Turberg gave a presentation about creativity and how she kept a OneNote page, and it was her inspiration board. And so whenever she found stuff, she would just pin it to that OneNote page, which brings me to my point that I typically find inspiration everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, it could be a magazine. It could, poor Troy will tell you, billboards going down the road. Yeah. Ooh, look at that one. Ooh, but that one.
Yeah, I use my cell phone. I'm either taking a photo of it, like a billboard, or I'll take a screenshot, and then I have a Dropbox folder that I will send it all to. They're not organized right then, but I then at least have a record of it.
Yeah.
See, and that's design learning right there, is picking up inspiration and good design. Mm-hmm. I take pictures of things that are bad design. Like, look, we never, ever want to do this.
Yeah.
Just don't get it mixed up. You're giving your people the direction to make sure it's the don't do it like this, not the do it like this.
Hey, let's, we got to wrap up because we got some other things happening today. This has been fantastic. Thank you, all three of you, actually, for joining. Let's do some quick little sign-offs, give a little tout about where you're from, where we can find you, and we'll put in the show notes all that information as well. So thank you. I'm Troy from TLC Creative Services based in San Diego, and we have a full design team, and we definitely focus on presentation design.
I'm Lori Collar, and can I just say ditto?
Yes.
Well, that was easy. I'm Steffi Lewis. You can find me at thepresentationguild.org or thepresentationworkshop.com.
And I'm Brian Jones. You can find me at elearningart.com. From the homepage or the blog, you can subscribe to my newsletter. That's the best way to follow what I'm doing.
Awesome.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Really appreciate it. And the summit has been great so far.
Oh, my God, so good.
Okay. Bye now.
Okay, so I'll kick off pro and tech tips. I'll actually start with my recommendation. Something new it's called Website Voice, and it's available at websitevoice.com. It's a WordPress plugin that allows you to make your website more accessible by adding an audio button to your text entries. So I've tested it with my blog, and it's really cool. I, of course, turned this over to my web designer, but he added the plugin, and now whenever I make a blog entry, I get a little button at the top of the entry that can be clicked on, and it can be read out loud for those people who might be visually impaired.
Wow, I have not heard of this. Now, just to clarify...
Yes.
is it you recording your voice or is it just a digitized voice? You're reading
it's a digitized voice. It's a digitized voice.
And it's good. It's very good, actually.
When I was talking with Nolan about it, he installed it while we were on the phone. I think that's pretty
and
amazing.
I've installed it at, I can't quite get it to work just yet, but I'm playing around with it, trying to figure out how to do it. WordPress makes installing, plugins very easy. But this is a very new one, so I'm just trying to figure it out.
I'm going to have to go check this out. I am not familiar with this at all. Well, mine is, I'm going to actually jump back to one we've talked about, and we've actually had him on the show. Jamie Garrock, his U-Tools tool set is come to the rescue on a very large project. Have you guys used the table tools that he has built into U-Tools?
I've played around with them. I don't think I've used them in practice.
So what's interesting is this is one of the few tools, you know, there's a toolbar and it says table tools and you click it and it really just leads you to an informational thing because the tools are accessible only when you right click on an actual table. So it's kind of interesting. You actually don't use the tools to ribbon, you right click on it. So we're doing a very large presentation for a state board of education and they're going through data of every school district, I believe it is, and it's just tons of data and they want to animate it in. Well, you cannot animate a table currently. You can't, can you? Both of you back me up on this. No?
Not really.
No, okay. No, no,
you cannot. Not in the way you think. The whole thing
yeah,
can come in.
Yeah, but, yeah let me rephrase no. that. They want to animate in yeah. certain exactly. cells at certain times and, you know, in different orders, not even in a linear order, you know, top to bottom or bottom to top. So we got thinking about this and like, okay, we could do boxes over it, you know, with filling those with the background fill. So, you know, we could, you know, those could kind of, you know, animate on, but then that makes it hard to review and print. And we've done that in the past. This one is so extensive. Finally turned to Jamie's tools, which I had played with when we first got them and I'd used them a little bit. But in this case, we actually take the table, we dupe it and slide it off to the side. And with selection pane, we just turn it off. This way we have a full editable table with all the cells filled in available to us. We then go back to the table that's visible, right click on it, and we convert every single cell to a text box. So the table stays as a table and it puts text boxes sized to each cell on top of it. We choose which ones to keep in the table. So we just delete those. Mm-hmm. And then we animate them away. Hundreds and hundreds of these tables are being done this way. Client is a static. They can print it, they can see it. They can even, you know, it's still editable. So yeah, U-Tools, table tools to the rescue for Excellent. A specific project.
Excellent.
Cool.
How about Sam, Nolan?
No, yeah. So mine is a plugin for Illustrator called ArcGIS Maps Plugin for Creative Cloud. Okay, follow me on this one. A lot of times I'll use Illustrator for maps and, you know, ultimately, you know, save them as SVG or dump them into PowerPoint. And I was actually doing a project last year in which I needed to download real maps, real detailed maps of parts of Africa. And ArcGIS is sort of the industry standard for highly detailed mapping files and everything. But it can get expensive. There's different levels and parts of it you can view for free. But long story short, I needed to edit these maps in Illustrator. But in order to do that, I needed a $2,500 plugin and I just to basically save out, you know, make an edit and save out this file that I needed. And I didn't end up going through. I didn't do it. I didn't need to. The project shifted a little bit. But there's a plugin now from the ArcGIS folks. I don't know if they're a company or a nonprofit or whatever they are, but there's a plugin now for Creative Cloud that essentially allows you to do this. So by installing this plugin from within Illustrator, you can look for any part on the globe, kind of like Google Maps, and then through various checkboxes and things, you can get a true editable map in Illustrator with streets, with names, everything layered, and it's amazing. It's fantastic. So you do need to work with it a little bit. So there's a we're going to include a link to a great, a little tutorial on it. But it's powerful and it's free, completely wow. free. So if you ever find yourself needing like, oh, I just need a vector map of the roads around my house or whatever, like this will let you do it. Again, you got to do a little work on it, but it's there and for you. So it's called ArcGIS Maps plugin for Creative Cloud.
Arc, A-R-C-A-R-K.
A-R-C-G-I-S. So if you're not sort of in that world, the whole world of GIS mapping is a huge one. I mean, it's a whole sort of, you know, bridges cartography and design and data and everything. There's whole experts who, you know, who do this kind of thing. And this is the main company and source of these maps. But yeah, it allows you to just really find a map anywhere in the world and bring it into Illustrator in a vector way. And the one for Photoshop, we'll bring it into Photoshop, but not vector.
That is awesome. See, pro and tech tips. I'm now adding this to my resource notes because at some point it's going to come up. I would have taken a while to, yeah, this is awesome. Thank you. This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, a professional design agency where we travel, and travel more to get to you, the client. that's what I feel like. This is week 3 of travel, by the way. I have a PowerPoint presentation blog, the PowerPoint blog. We have a lot of fun on our Facebook page. So facebook.com/TLC Creative Services. Home website, tlccreative.com. Don't go there. We still haven't gotten the new site up. And of course, you're right here at the presentation blog.
This is Nolan from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com. Subscribe for lots of free downloads and goodies. And if your organization is looking for on-site presentation training in presentation or data viz, drop me a line.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz. You can visit my website and blog at presentationwiz.biz. The Presentation Guild at presentationguild.org. And you can also find me on LinkedIn as Sandra Johnson, PowerPoint MVP, and Twitter as PPTWiz.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.